Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, I'd like to welcome everyone back to Ohio Exopolitics. I've got a few days here, vacation time coming to me, so I will be back to my normal schedule on Wednesday, but I'm sure enjoying this little respite during the 4th of July. We're talking about the Meyer case, of course. Billy Meyer, if you don't know who he is, he's an 80-year-old man. He lives about 45 minutes east of Zurich, Switzerland. And he lives in a tiny mountain village. It's called Hinterschmidruti, nestled in a pine forest amongst the mountains of northern Switzerland. Billy has lived the most unusual life. He had his first physical and telepathic contacts when he was a very young boy, about 5 years old. He started getting telepathic messages from a man named Svath. He was told to go out into the forest near his home and wait. And then shortly thereafter, out of the sky came this silvery pear-shaped craft, which landed nearby. Out stepped a very elderly man who looked like he was wearing something like a diver suit. And then Billy felt like he was lifted up, and it says in the contact notes that he was lifted up as if by ghostly hands, brought into the ship, and Svath took both of them up into Earth orbit in his spacecraft. And Svath, who was a man, a human being from another world, started to tell Billy about Billy's previous lives, and that he had been the people that today we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And he was told that he taught an ancient universal teaching called the Teaching of the Spirit, which identified the universal consciousness, which is the supreme intelligence behind all things in our universe. And it also identified certain laws that the universe works by, laws like cause and effect, the law of love, the law of harmony, the law of abundance and prosperity, the law of reincarnation, all these various laws, the law of striving, which is related to your evolution. So Billy was amazed that this man was telling him all these things. Svath also told Billy that he would be his teacher for the next 11 years. And this relationship went on for 11 years, where Billy would meet Svath, and then Svath would teach him another lesson. And this went on, like I said, for about 11 years. Billy lost a lot of normal schooling time, missed a lot of classes, and his father was very harsh, sometimes would beat him until he could neither sit or stand. So Billy, again, from a very young age, had a very difficult and trying life, but he had also a very rewarding life, in that he was learning this incredible information. During one of the trips up into Svath's ship, Svath placed a device on his head which had many different kinds of wires and gadgets associated with it, and it unlocked Billy's abilities that he had in previous lifetimes, abilities to look into the future and things like that. Svath told Billy that he should stay in the background and focus on his writings. And that's what he did. And one of his books that he's written is called The Might of Thoughts, which is a bilingual book. The title in German is Macht der Gedanken. I have the second edition, which came out in 2014. I believe the early edition came out in 2012. It is an amazing book. And in the foreword of the book, it It says, and this was written by Elizabeth Mooseberger. It says, so the book which lies before you is dedicated to humankind, which is ill in its consciousness, so that it can again find the creational natural way, which it lost a long time ago. So this book helps us control our thoughts, and our thoughts actually ultimately lead to the circumstances of our life. So good thoughts lead to good feelings, and the feelings always come out of the thoughts. Feelings grow from the thoughts. Feelings are different than emotions. Emotions cannot be steered. They come up suddenly, and they're hard to rein in. But feelings grow. Feelings come from the thoughts, and then good thoughts and good feelings lead to good habits. And when you start to establish good habits in your life, that will eventually lead to good circumstances. So one of the things that we need to do in the controlling of our thinking is to do a little self-analysis. And it says on page 294, for example, in The Might of Thoughts, that if the human being consciously steers his or her life according to his innermost creational nature, he or she also loves and respects the results. In other words, we have basically two selves, so to speak. You have a innermost creational nature, which is influenced by your spirit form, and you have like a false self, which is threatened by your evolution. So you learned over time to listen to these impulses from your innermost creational nature. And steering means to guide or control the movement. So you want to guide and control the movement of your life. And if you do that through these impulses, which come from your creational nature, you'll love the results that start to occur. This is a very interesting process, and to really understand what's going on here, I think it's important to step back again and look at what the spirit form is. The spirit form is a fragment of the universal consciousness. It resides in the middle of our brain in an area called the superior colliculus, which is the area of our brain that integrates all of our senses and controls our sight. So the spirit form is the part of you that lives essentially for an eternity. In other words, your spirit form reincarnates. Your material consciousness and your body during this lifetime really only exist for that one lifetime. Now, when you die, your spirit form leaves your body and it takes your consciousness with it. And it goes into this energy band around the planet where we live, and your memories, your consciousness from your previous life is processed in an area in the other world called the overall consciousness block. And all of the things that you've learned in the past life are distilled down into their essences, like love and respect and assiduousness and meticulousness and dedication and logic and rationality. And all these things that you've made progress on in this lifetime are distilled into their essences, and your spirit form absorbs these. And your spirit form gets strengthened. And then the next thing that happens after all of these previous life experiences are distilled down, these evolutive values are programmed into the new subconsciousness. Because in the other world, in the realm, in the spirit realm, we get a new personality, a new conscious, unconscious, and subconscious mind, a new consciousness, and your evolutive values are programmed into your subconscious. And then the spirit form leaves the spirit realm and takes with it the conscious mind and moves back into the material realm, into the body of the fetus after the sperm fertilizes the egg. 21 days, it moves, the spirit form comes into a child that's 21 days old, and that spirit form contains the energy which branches throughout the whole body. It causes the heart to beat and the mind starts to think again. So where this book comes in is helping you evolve faster in your current lifetime. And there is something called the law of harmony, which means that we learn to think in a neutral, positive, equalized manner. In other words, you're not negative. You're not way, way ridiculously positive either. You want to have the following things. You want to have optimism. You want to have confidence. You want to be cheerful. You want to be relaxed. You want to be enthusiastic. And you want to be thankful. So those are the characteristics of your thinking that we're searching for. During the previous show yesterday, we talked about enthusiasm. And enthusiasm is an important thing. In the life of a human being, enthusiasm for knowledge, truth, wisdom, and evolution can work wonders, as the saying goes. Enthusiasm is kind of like a magic spell. Enthusiasm kind of re-educates your whole view on life. And how do you get enthusiasm? Well, enthusiasm, if you have harmony in your thinking, it tends to lead to enthusiasm. And one of the things that you can do is you can have something called a wish idea or a wish imagination. It's talked about on page 322. It says, such a value only arises through the manifestation of wish ideas and wish imaginations, which are capable of manifesting, can therefore be realized by means of the mind of thoughts when the mind of thoughts is sufficiently strengthened by the necessary enthusiasm. So maybe I can find that page and we could talk about this a little bit more. Ideas, imaginations, and efforts must be retained in the consciousness and be newly nourished again and again by the thoughts, so that the consciousness thereby actually absorbs and holds on to them. The ideas and the imaginations must be clear and sharp and must not pervade dimly and diffusely in a shadowy manner. The clearer and sharper the details, clearer and sharper the ideas, imaginations, and effort, the more powerful the enthusiasm for them and the capacity of the might of thoughts to realize them. So I'm just now learning. Of course, we've all experienced enthusiasm in our life. I never realized it was such a tool, and I never realized how effective it is. And I'm still and just learning how to foster enthusiasm. I think that there's kind of a two-edged sword here, though. More on that a little bit later, but I think that there's a correct way and a wrong way to have enthusiasm. I haven't tracked that all down yet. I don't have all the details for you on that yet. But now, there's a German word for enthusiasm, and it begins with a B. Begeisterung, which is a terrible pronunciation. I'll get the correct pronunciation on that soon enough. Enthusiasm means intense and eager enjoyment, an interest or an approval. In Latin, ethos means having a god within. Enthusiasm originates from the Greek meaning possessed by a god's essence. applied by the Greeks to manifestations of divine possession, etc., etc. But really, it's like having this incredible power within you. And if you have enthusiasm, you'll feel raised to evolutive heights, and it can be on a moment-by-moment basis. So, but you shouldn't lose your neutral positive. You know, be careful in enthusiasm to not become, make sure you don't become overly positive, because then you're out of balance. You've lost the law of harmony. That's probably all I'm going to talk about in terms of the Might of Thoughts today. I wanted to chat a little bit about overpopulation, which is a touchy subject with some people. Let me play a clip for you. I found a guy that is very interesting. This guy's a character. He's quite humorous in some senses of the word. I was in the beginning, I'm not now, on the fence about overpopulation. You know, there is a terrible way to think about overpopulation. That's horrible. People think about, oh, there's enough space, and there's unbelievable amounts of space on the earth. The real fact of the matter is people will not spread out. People gravitate to the places with fresh water, with a reasonably warm climate, and that's the place where the forests are. So the first thing we destroy are forests. The forests moderate the weather, and then we suck up all the fresh water. Only 3% of our water is fresh water, by the way. So people can't, you know, look at the South Pole, Antarctica. There's like 7 million square miles down there. Almost nobody lives down there. So people don't live in all of this empty space. And you hear the silly things like you could cram all the people in the world into Texas. Oh, wouldn't that be horrible? Imagine. And look, I mean, think about cramming 100 people into your house, which if you've got a reasonably good-sized house, you might be able to fit 100 in if they're all standing there crammed together. You know, but it would destroy your house. It would create such a horrible mess. You'd have no food. You couldn't live that way. It'd be horrible. You'd be at each other's throats. You'd be killing each other, which is what we're doing. Anyway, let me set things up here, and we'll listen to a very interesting individual. Maybe I can track this guy down and have him on the show sometimes. He's kind of funny, actually. So hang on here as I twiddle with things a bit and get us in a position where we can listen.
You know, every time the subject of overpopulation comes up, there's always this guy, or I guess sometimes the girl, who comes out with this shit, goes like this. Overpopulation is a myth. And if you press them on this, they say some shit like, there's plenty of room left. In fact, did you know you could fit the entire population of the Earth in the state of Texas? Okay, well, you could probably fit everyone in my neighborhood in my house, too. Doesn't mean it's a good idea. The problem here is not a space problem, okay? It's not the world's overpopulated because we're just running out of room for more humans. That's not the issue. Oil that we're running out of. It's coal that we're running out of. It's rare minerals that we're running out of. It's fresh water that we're running out of. The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations says that by 2025, 1.8 billion people will be living in regions with extreme water scarcity. The Ogallala Aquifer supplies water for about one-third of our crops here in the U.S., and it is running dry. It will not last another 50 years at the rate that we are draining it, and it'll take 6,000 years to fill back up again. So by that time, won't do us much fucking good. More bad news for our crops. Another thing we're running low on is phosphorus, which is an essential ingredient to fertilizers that we use to grow things like food. And these fucking idiots, they say overpopulation is a myth because there's plenty of space left. Plenty of space. So much space. I mean, that's like saying there's no problem letting, I don't know, 50 people stay at your house. Yeah, maybe there's enough room technically for everyone to be there, but there's not enough food. There's not enough bathroom space. There's really not enough room on the couch. There's plenty of ways in which it's not good to have 50 people in your house, even if they can all fit. I mean, holy shit. Our diminishing resources are not the only concern, by the way. We're not just fucking ourselves with this. We're also fucking the rest of nature. The Great Barrier Reef is suffering right now an unprecedented bleaching event. And a good chunk of the reef could die. The reason this is happening is because of record hot temperatures in the Pacific Ocean. And the oceans of the Earth are in terrible shape in general. We're seeing huge die-offs of all kinds of species. Dolphins, seabirds, plankton, krill, starfish, brown pelicans, orcas, sea lions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're all dying off in record numbers. We are, as a species, just wreaking havoc on the ecology of this fucking planet. But, you know, I'm not a big environmentalist, okay? Because I pretty much believe that all of the problems I'm talking about and many, many more that I won't even bother listing because what the fuck good will it even do? I mean, I could talk about the dying off of the bees. I could talk about...
Very interesting fellow here. I like his graphic expression, which is really what's going on. We're in a horrific situation, and we have to stop thinking about it as just a space issue. And we need to. What I would like to make people aware of is that the forests are critical for moderating the weather, and that the shade produced in the summertime keeps the air cooler, which helps prevent the massive storms from forming, because massive storms form when cool air comes up against hotter air. And it's the same thing, but on the flip side, in the summer, the forests tend to keep the light from reflecting back. Like if you have a barren area with just snow on it, all that light will reflect back, and hence the warmth will reflect back as well, but the trees again will hold a little of that warmth in the winter, which again keeps the weather in a more moderate state, so the storms don't form as easy. Also, the tree lines create a turbulence, a spinning spiral of turbulence when the air blows through, and what this does is help with rain. It helps to promote rain and the formation of clouds. So these forests are critical for the moderation of our weather, for the prevention of erosion, and for the creation of precipitation for rain. So all of this plays a role. In many ways, I think the biggest danger to the Earth is not the nuclear bomb, but the bulldozer, because the bulldozer is the tool for providing for this gigantic population that we have. The next guy I'm going to play a little bit of is Sir David Attenborough, and this is a quiet clip, so I'll have to turn up a bit. So I may not play very long because it's a little quiet. Here we go.
Years ago, when the WWF was founded, there were about 3 billion people on Earth. Now there are almost 7 billion, over twice as many, and every one of them needing space. Space for their homes, space to grow their food, or get others to grow it for them, space to build schools and roads and airfields. Where could that come from? A little might be taken from land occupied by other people, but most of it could only come from the land which, for millions of years, animals and plants had had for themselves, the natural world. But the impact of these extra millions of people has spread far beyond the space that they physically claimed. The spread of industrialization has changed the chemical consistency of the atmosphere. The oceans that cover most of the surface of the planet have been polluted and increasingly acidified, and the Earth is warming. We now realize that the disasters that continue increasingly to afflict the natural world have one element that connects them all: the unprecedented increase in the number of human beings on the planet. There have been prophets who've warned us of this impending disaster, of course. One of the first was Thomas Malthus. His most important book, An Essay of the Principle of Population, was published over 200 years ago in 1798. In it, he argued that the human population would increase inexorably until it was halted by what he called misery and vice. Today, for some reason, that prophecy seems to be largely ignored, or at any rate disregarded. It's true that he did not foresee the so-called Green Revolution, which greatly increased the amount of food that can be produced in any given area of arable land. And there may be other advances in our food-producing skills that we ourselves still can't foresee. But such advances only delay things. The fundamental truth that Malthus proclaimed remains the truth. There cannot be more people on this earth than can be fed. Many people would like to deny that this is so. They would like to believe in that oxymoron, sustainable growth. Kenneth Bowling, President Kennedy's environmental advisor 45 years ago, said something about this. Anyone who believes in indefinite growth in anything physical on a physically finite planet, he said, is either mad or an economist. The population of the world is now growing by nearly 80 million a year, 1.5 million a week, 250,000 a day, 10,000 an hour, growing. In this country, it's projected to grow by 10 million in the next 22 years.
Wow. Those are some scary statistics. The one that stuck in my head is actually one that I had kind of read before, which is talking about 10,000 people being born an hour. And the number that I got from Frosty Wooldridge was 9,000. So it's probably has increased since some of these statistics were taken. So 9,000 people born per, or 9,000 to 10,000 people born per hour. Now think about that insanity. That is unbelievable. 77 million, roughly, people born every year. The world population grows by 77 million born every year. 10,000 people born per hour. 4,000 people die on the streets of India every day. 4,000 people are born on the streets of India every day. Excuse me, 4 million. These statistics are so beyond what you can even imagine. It's like when Frosty Wooldridge first told me there was 50 lanes of traffic going around Beijing, and I didn't believe him. I honestly did not believe him. It was just too incredible for me. Bangladesh, a country the size of Iowa with 146 million people in it. America will add 100 million people by 2035 because of immigration, if we don't stop all of this immigration. So the people on the left are going to have to hopefully think about things in a little more objective way. And that speaker before David Attenborough, who I'm going to have to look up his name, talked about the coming global water crisis, which is coming, believe me. And we're so fortunate if you're living in an area where you can have plenty of water. Okay, I'm going to change subjects again. And I'm trying to do that so we don't pound on these subjects for too long of a time. I know that can probably be somewhat overwhelming for some folks. There's a group called the Giza Intelligences, which is no longer on the earth, but they've had a profound impact on the people here on earth. One of the Giza Intelligences we call Jehovah today. I don't believe his name was Jehovah at that time because there was no letter J in the ancient world. It may have been called Yahovah. Anyway, if you go back to the Eris the 11th, it's probably the very beginnings of the lineage of the Giza Intelligences. This is sometime after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria, the great catastrophe that wiped out, or almost wiped out, the Earth. Was about 12,500 years ago, I believe. There was a rather large ice age during that time when the meteor was brought in by the Lemurians, which exploded in the atmosphere, sent forth a tremendous amount of heat, which caused the melting of these glaciers all over and a tremendous tsunami in the Atlantic Ocean, which wiped out Atlantis. And this giant melting all over the earth caused this great flood, which ended up in the deaths of untold billions of animals and millions of people. And after that great catastrophe, these extraterrestrials came back. One of these was named Jehovah. And Jehovah ruled the earth until about 3,660 years ago. He let himself be called the creator. Jehovah was murdered by Jehave. And Jehave was murdered by Erisane. So what would happen is these cruel, I call them the Elohim, is what they're kind of called in Hebrew, the Old Testament. The Elohim ruled on the earth for thousands of years. They called themselves God. And typically what would happen is that the sons would kill the fathers. They were brutal, brutal people. Jehave ruled wickedly and screamed for blood and revenge. And again, he let himself be proclaimed as the creator. He had three sons, Erisane, Ptah, and Salem. Erisane was the one that murdered his father, Jehave. And Erisane returned to the earth and settled down with his army in the land of Egypt in the old cubicle constructions that were far below the Giza Plateau that had been around for 70,000 years. And deep within the interior of the earth and below the pyramids, these extraterrestrial humans established themselves in these rooms and constructions below the Great Pyramid of Giza, and it became a center for their wicked purposes. And they had these tyrannical plans for taking control of the people of the earth through deceit, lying, intrigues, through religious teachings and cults. And this is what happened in our past. So, Erisane established the Giza Intelligences around 3010 BCE. The next person to come along was Jehovah, probably called Yehovah or something similar. He took over Erisane's rule. He was known as the Cruel One. And it's very interesting, Jehovah, the name Jehovah is used in our Bible, but it's only been carried along in the translation of the King James Bible. It's interesting that if you look in in Bible Gateway software and you set your setting to King James Bible, you'll be able to find the term Jehovah. But if you set it to the New International Standard, it fell out of favor in terms of being a translation from the word God. So now you'll find the translations say Lord or God or things like that. But Jehovah doesn't appear first. In Genesis 22:14, Abraham is about to sacrifice his own son and puts him on an altar with a bunch of wood and is about to stab his own son because he's been brainwashed by the Elohim, by Jehovah particularly, into this blind obedience. And we would call this religious hysteria today, but when it's set in the context of ancient history and it's put in quote-unquote sacred writings, this creates a religious fog over people's minds. And what is really an act of murder and cruelty is portrayed in the light of obedience and holiness anyway. Very, very sad. He's about to offer his son Isaac as a burnt offering. And Abraham called this place Jehovah Jireh. And it's you only find that term in the King James Version of the Bible. But Jehovah intervenes and says, don't kill your son, go get this ram and use him for a burnt offering. Well, the religion will teach you the burnt offering is looking forward to Christ. There's a Mauro Biglino, who's a great translator of the Bible. He says the Bible does not talk about God. And he says that the Bible, the Old Testament that we have, was really created between the 7th and 9th century A.D., and by these Masoretic texts. And Mauro translates Masoretic texts, and he's translated 17 volumes of literal translations from the Old Testament. So what they used to do was translate these scriptures into Hebrew. They would put them in Hebrew. That's the way it was originally documented, with only consonants. And as it stands in the original Hebrew, it's a very neutral thing. It's not religious at all. It doesn't talk about God or anything. What came later is when people translated these, they put in the vowel points, where then the religious interpretation comes in. So it's a very strange thing. The Meyer information tells us these Giza intelligences were extraterrestrial humans who for a while had a base underneath the Great Pyramid, and Billy actually was taken down there when he was 16 years old by an extraterrestrial woman named Ascot, and she showed him the ancient spacecraft they had down there and the smaller ships and the strangely dressed guards. And they also had religious paraphernalia down there, like a perfect replica of the cross and of the crown of thorns and these sorts of things. And Ascot told Billy that religion had been used as a tool to gain control of the earth humans after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria. And it's been effective, and it's created kind of a psychological damage to the people of the earth. And one of the psychological damages that has occurred is the inability to think independently. And you can even see this in the UFO community. Instead of being able to come to their own conclusion based on all of the people that have come out. Like the one person that I like to talk about in terms of a disclosure is the mentor of Dr. Wernher von Braun, who was a man named Hermann Oberth, who was another Nazi rocket scientist, who said that the people of Germany could not take credit for their advancements alone because they had been helped by people of other worlds. So we do have a disclosure, and this is a scientist who said this in the 1970s in a public meeting that was recorded. You can listen to it on YouTube if you look up Dr. Hermann Oberth. Well, we've also had people like Clifford Stone, Sergeant Clifford Stone from the Air Force, Bob Dean, who've come forward, also another enlisted man at the level of a sergeant. And these both talk about crash retrievals, landing sites. In the case of Bob Dean, he mentioned that there was a document which he had the clearance to read. It was higher clearance that talked about six races engaging the Earth, extraterrestrial races, a couple of which looked exactly like us. And this is where the Pleiaren come in and these Giza intelligences who look just like us. They're human beings just like us. So our history has been profoundly misunderstood. Let me continue reading from Deuteronomy 20:16. Again, these are the words of one of these Giza intelligences, probably Jehovah, or Jehovah as he's called today. However, in the cities of the nations, the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance, do not leave anything that breathes. Completely destroy them, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, as the Lord your God has commanded you. Otherwise, they will teach you to follow all the detestable things that they do, worshiping your gods, and you will sin against the Lord. You will sin against the Elohim. So there were there was maybe another group of Elohim, I don't know, that were on the earth at this time too. And if you look at Numbers 31:7, you'll see where the genocide was taken place, where Israel had basically at least killed all the soldiers of the Midianites, and then they were told to go back in and kill the women and the children, but to keep the virgins for themselves. So they kept 32,000 virgins. Unbelievable number. 32,000 virgins / concubines / sex slaves. I don't know how you want to look at it. But how is it that they're so evil that they're worthy of death, except for 32,000 hot babes that the Israelites wanted? Or who knows? I mean, I think that the Elohim, the Giza intelligences, wanted to make Israel powerful because Israel was under the control of these teachings, these Giza intelligences. And they were going to use Israel to gain control of the whole world. Which, ironically, even though the Giza intelligences are dead and gone, it still seems like that particular group or one branch of that group is behind a lot of the intrigues that go on today. Believe me, it wasn't just Hitler being evil that wanted him to go after the Jews. The whole culture of Germany was being attacked by certain elites. They were putting all kinds of pornography into Germany, and they were destroying the culture intentionally. They were destroying the culture. That's why the book burning came about in World War II. We're not really taught about that. But a lot of the books that were burned was just the pornography that was being thrown into Germany at this time. And we still have the same thing, kind of things going on now. So, you know, I was always kind of middle of the roads about the whole Jewish thing, and I don't want to say all, but I think that there's just a subset of this group that's probably behind a lot of the intrigues and a lot of great, of course, Jewish people in any group, a lot of great people. So we don't want to make grotesque generalizations in any way. But I want to go on a little bit about the potential civil war that we're facing in this country. And it's a scary thing that's coming. Let me try to play a few clips here, and we'll continue discussing this.
Hi, everybody. Stefan Molyneux, Freedom Main Radio. Hope you're doing well. Back from the front lines, our good friend Mike Cernovich, organizer of the deplorable U-boat commander of Periscope Excellence, and soon to be on Right Side Broadcasting with a new podcast called Right Mindset. Mike, how are you doing?
Doing great, man. Good to be back and to be... Who knew that in 2000, you know, the current year, the joke is, who knew in the current year I would just be glad to be home safe?
Okay, so a lot of stories are swirling around the deplorable. We've talked about some of the stuff that happened on this show. Can you give me the one-stop shop synopsis of what happened, you know, the soup to nuts, as they call it, the A to Z, from getting ditched from the first venue to pulling off one of the most successful social coups of the century?
Yes, of course. So some friends and I, we had a kind of grassroots social media activist thing called MAGA3X, which was based on Grant Cardone's excellent book, The 10X Rule, which has become a meme in of itself, which is 10X your life. Now, I don't think 10Xing your life is realistic, because people think in, well, I'm going to do just 10 times more than I did today. 10 is a lot. So I go, how about 3X? MAGA3X is realistic that each person could get 3 people registered to vote. You could get 3 people to the voting booth, and then share 3 articles or post to a hashtag 3 times a day, MAGA3X. So we started that in, I don't know, July or so, and it really started hopping and took on a massive life of its own. The trending hashtags, we got, you know, worldwide trending hashtags, that was all part of MAGA3X's grassroots activism. We had people register to vote who had never voted before, and we had people going to the ballot box who had never voted. So then here's what occurred to us. There's all these new people in politics who don't necessarily have the connections to get tickets to events. So for those of you who are listening and don't really know.
Well, later on that same show, they begin to discuss this potential conflict that's brewing between the left and the right on this country. I had forgotten that a particular clip started out so slow in terms of our current topic. The Meyer material says that by 2020, we may have civil war here in the U.S. I'm hoping that that doesn't happen. I think that there's very good possibilities that we'll get more time at the very least, or that it won't happen at all. Let's continue to our next clip today.
We're going to lose the whole country to a bunch of bloodthirsty communists and pedophiles if we don't back the president. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got intel here that I've not been allowed to tell you, but there is a civil war going on in the government right now. Even having commercials right now, you know, we have a new Iraq war for like a week, they don't have ads on radio, or when 9/11 happened for about a week, there were no ads on radio. I don't have words to describe to you how much trouble this country's in. The Democratic Party has been working for the communist Chinese for at least 20 years. Because, see, once they took money from the Chinese, they all got compromised. And now a lot of the Republican leaders are working for them. And I have a lot of intel I'm not allowed to share with you that's directly from the president.
So both the Democrats and the Republicans are taking money from the Chinese. And this is a really bad state we're in. That means our government is filled with traitors. That may be no surprise to a lot of you. But let's go to our next clip. which there's a colonel that's coming out that's starting to talk about some of this. His name is Colonel Schaefer.
So I want to ask Colonel Schaefer, former head of the Bin Laden unit, patriot, with a lot of big connections, helped expose Benghazi, you name it, works for the London Center for Foreign Policy Research, Fox contributor, where we are currently and how serious the situation is. But first, here's a clip of Sean Hannity Tuesday. They're calling for him to be fired right now at the Washington Post.
Also tonight, a soft coup is underway right here in the United States of America in an attempt to overturn November's election results and forcibly remove a duly elected president from office. Sinister forces quickly aligning in what is becoming now, in my mind, a clear and present danger. That is tonight's very important opening monologue.
All right, boom. Then a 15-minute breakdown of them saying kill the president, the deep state. Schumer bragging, the intelligence community has seven ways to Sunday to take you down. Then they come out in a Washington Post article and say Fox News' Sean Hannity is encroaching on Alex Jones' territory because he quotes the same statements they've made about the plan to overthrow him. So they want to get this plan going, but then they want to deny it, even though it's in the news, when we oppose it. That is what they call black propaganda. They are using serious unprecedented disinfo. Colonel Schaefer, you're more of an expert on this than even I am. I know that you've worked in some of the most classified areas there are and really head up a lot of things that I'll never see the light of day for this country. Am I overestimating how serious this is?
No, Alex, thank you for having me on. And no, you're laying back completely correctly. You're essentially outlining the situation based on their own verbiage. And of course, then when they get caught in the open daylight, they then try to say, no, we never said that. It's all about you. Same way the deep state goes about saying the deep state doesn't exist. And as you pointed out, and this is the first time you and I have spoken.
I've been a real supporter of Trump. However, after he sent those cruise missiles against Syria and attacked that airfield, and since we've shot down one of the Syrian jets, which is not even being covered, I've really started to wonder if Trump may be being controlled by these dark forces. Here's David Icke with some very interesting thoughts on Trump.
Well, a term that's been very much in the news since Trump came to office is something called an executive order. Now, this is a subject that I've talked about and written about going way, way back, because it's an extraordinary thing to happen in what is called a democracy. When one man can sign his name at the bottom of a piece of paper without any public debate, no debate anywhere else in the political system, and change the law of the land in fundamental ways, often. And the executive order was described very well by an aide to President Clinton, when he said, swish of the pen, law of the land. And that's what it is. And we're seeing here Donald Trump at his desk in the Oval Office signing these pieces of paper, executive orders, and dictating the law affecting not just 320 million Americans, but vast numbers in the wider world. And for much of American presidential history, they've been used sparingly. But particularly since the time of Bill Clinton and through Boy George Bush and Obama and now Trump, they're being used constantly to dictate.
That's one of the trends we're seeing, is the constant use of executive orders by the president. You know, just going right past the Congress, almost like a tyranny. Anyway, one of the big things that's being discussed is the potential that the left is preparing to plunge us into a civil war. Let's listen to this clip.
This is war. It's called information operations, information warfare.
Trump has to move against these people, and I know high-level folks are advising Trump to get rid of this whole nest of leakers he's got. Go on the offense, indict Hillary. You've got her cut and dry. Go after Obama. They want to fight. They're about to get one, because if we don't, they're not going to give us quarter. They don't want to make a deal. They don't want to compromise. The globalists want to win because they know the people all over the world are turning against them. Here is Colonel Schaefer breaking down the info war.
For better or for worse, is the ultimate classification or declassification authority. He can talk to anybody about anything, no matter what the level is. And beyond that, I understand that things were instantly twisted by the National Security Council staff and leaked, obviously, to the Post. And there was a very delayed, very muted response where they should have been right up there outlining the facts right up front about how this is completely false. So I think they, like you point out, The White House communication staff has to believe they are now at a state of war. This is war. It's called information operations, information warfare. And clearly, the other side, the deep state and the Clinton folks, and I have to say some folks on the Republican side, are all lining up. The battle lines are drawn. And it's time for people to understand how to deal with this as if it it's a war.
The deep state is committed to maintaining this assault. It seems. I mean, we're right. Not even 4 months into the Trump presidency, and the assaults continue, the attacks continue, and we have, as you indicated at the outset,
right.
The New York Times and the Washington Post, these are no longer fake news. I mean, they are, it's an entire psyops. It is a disinformation campaign from previous, former journalists.
Right.
The disinformation that's coming from CNN and places like that, it's incredible. We've got another clip here.
I'm more convinced than ever that America is headed for a civil war. And I do mean a kinetic war, an actual blood spilled in the streets kind of war. And it's very sad to come to this conclusion, but you can't avoid it if you watch the total insanity of the mindless left. And some of the latest things that they've come up with, I mean, not only are they flag burners who hate America, they hate the American flag, they hate the Constitution, they hate the Founding Fathers, they hate white people, they hate masculinity, they hate soldiers and veterans. I mean, the list just goes on and on. They hate firearms and the Second Amendment. They hate free speech. They're not tolerant. They're actually intolerant of anyone who doesn't agree with them. I mean, it's the left, the people on the left, who are the bigots, the racists, the intolerant, mindless sheeple, obedient, thought-controlled zombies, indoctrinated mounds of shivering, just nonsense. They have nothing. They hate facts, and they keep spouting alternative facts to each other. We'll use that phrase against them, you see. They have their own alternative facts, and they just keep spouting them back and forth until they believe they're true. And they're all lies. And the left is so mentally unhinged at this point that it's become obvious to me in just the last week that there's probably no way to reason with them. There's no middle ground with them, sadly. You can't have a rational discussion with them. It's impossible. Because they aren't interested in reason or history or law. I mean, just their abandonment of law is astonishing. Look at their sanctuary cities policy.
Well, thanks, folks. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day. Bye-bye.